Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today we are diving into, well, a really profound thought experiment. We're exploring a question that sounds almost like science fiction. What actually happens to Earth if humanity, like right now, just vanished?
It's a huge question, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's the core idea behind Alan Weisman's incredible book, The World Without Us.
Huh.
And the key thing here, I think, is that this isn't some disaster movie about survival.
Right.
Weisman completely sidesteps how we disappear. He's not interested in the cause. He focuses purely on the objective scientific what happens next.
And that focus, that specific angle, is exactly why this deep dive is so valuable for you listening in. We're kind of using Weisman's meticulous research like a strange mirror. By imagining ourselves gone, we get this unique, unbiased view of our actual footprint, you know, the scale of it. You suddenly realize how much constant, just massive energy we pour into just keeping everything, well, together, keeping civilization from just dissolving.
It's a real confrontation with how patient nature is and how resilient. If you want to know your real impact, look at what's left when you stop fighting it, basically.
Yeah. So let's talk about the guy who guides us on this journey, Alan Weisman. He's an award-winning journalist, right? An author, a professor, known for really deep environmental reporting, big publication.
Yeah, exactly. And what's so interesting about him for this book, anyway, is that his expertise isn't just like one narrow scientific field. He's a master synthesizer. He pulls complex information together.
Okay.
And for The World Without Us, he didn't just sit back and read reports.
Yeah.
No, he was out there like a proper science journalist, traveling the globe, talking to experts firsthand.
So connecting dots between fields that maybe don't usually talk to each other, how did that work in practice?
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
I mean, he interviewed the engineers running the pumps under the New York City subway system.
Wow.
Then he's talking to biologists studying wildlife in places like Chernobyl, climatologists, nuclear physicists, even chemists specializing in plastics. He brought all these sort of disparate voices together to build this one coherent, scientifically plausible timeline.
Ah, I see.
That whole multidisciplinary thing is what gives the book its real weight, I think.
And his tone, you mentioned it's crucial. It's really objective, isn't it? Non-judgmental. He's not pointing fingers.
Not at all.
He's just reporting.
Yeah.
Reporting on the physical consequences of what we do collectively.
Exactly. The book is essentially like doing archaeology in reverse. Instead of digging down to find the past, we're projecting forward to watch our whole civilization, cities, objects, materials turn into ruins. And eventually, you know, geological layers.
The scope is just huge, covering timescales we hardly ever think about. Temporally, he goes from like hours after we vanish.
Right.
All the way out to millions of years in the future. It's mind-boggling.
And geographically, too, it's just as broad. You go from deep beneath New York City, looking at that fragile infrastructure, to these remote, almost accidental nature preserves, like the Korean Demilitarized Zone, the DMZ, places that have already started reverting back.
And right away, what hits you is this core kind of humbling paradox of our civilization.
Yeah.
The book shows how surprisingly fragile our greatest achievements are. Skyscrapers, roads, they crumble relatively fast. But then the unsettling permanence of our most common stuff, plastics, nuclear waste.
It's a tough thought, isn't it? Our massive engineered cities. Mm. They're temporary. They rely on constant effort. But the disposable garbage we try to get rid of, that's the stuff that sticks around potentially forever.
Yeah.
It forces you to completely rethink what permanent even means on this planet.
Okay, let's zoom in on that immediate aftermath. Weisman uses New York City as his main case study for how infrastructure decays and the speed of it. It's a real wake-up call, especially for how we design things.
Well, within just 2 days, the power grid fails. Simple reason.
Right.
No one's there to manage it anymore.
Right.
And without power, those crucial pumps keeping the massive NYC subway system dry, they just stop. Dead stop.
Mm.
And that's like the starting gun for the city's decay.
The engineers he talked to confirmed the scale of this constant fight, didn't they? Millions upon millions of gallons of water pumped out every single day.
Every day. It's incredible.
So without that vigilance, the tunnels flood almost instantly. They become these underground rivers just eating away at the steel supports holding up the streets above.
And once those steel columns rust and buckle under the weight and the water, whole avenues just collapse inward. The main weapon is just water, you know, patiently applying pressure. But then nature itself steps in.
Yeah, the wild does not wait around. Streets crack open. Hardy weeds force their way up first. Then these really tough trees like the ailanthus.
The tree of heaven, they sometimes call it.
Is that right?
Yeah, but it's basically a super invasive weed tree. Its roots are incredibly destructive. They just fracture concrete, asphalt, foundations, whatever's in their way.
So Wiseman estimates that within just a few centuries, which sounds like a long time, but geologically is nothing.
A blink.
Right, a blink. Much of Manhattan would basically revert to a temperate forest. You'd just have these skeletal, decaying husks of skyscrapers sticking up above the trees.
A pretty striking image.
So the cities revert fast. What about life itself? He contrasts domesticated animals with wild species, right?
Yeah, and it's not good news for most domestic animals. Mm-hmm. Your cows, chickens, even many specialized pet breeds, they'd likely perish pretty quickly.
Why is that?
They've just lost the instincts, you know, how to find food reliably, how to evade predators without fences or human help. The domestic world really depends on us.
But the wild world, that's a different story.
Completely different. It explodes. Oh. And the book gives us these two amazing real-world labs where we can actually see this happening. The Chernobyl Exclusion Zone and the Korean Demilitarized Zone, the DMZ.
Despite, you know, extreme conditions, radiation in one, landmines in the other.
Exactly. Despite all that, because the human pressure is gone, wildlife has just flourished. Wolves, bears, wild boar, even really rare birds like cranes have come back in astonishing numbers.
Wow.
These zones are living proof of nature's incredible capacity for recovery and how fast it can happen when we just step aside.
And this affects farmland too, right? The huge areas we've converted to agriculture.
Oh, absolutely. Our vast monocultures, you know, the endless fields of corn and soy, stripped bare of anything native, they'd be among the very first human landscapes to vanish completely.
Because they need constant help.
Constant intervention. Hmm. Fertilizers, pesticides, irrigation. These crops were bred for yield, not for resilience in the wild. So hardy weeds and native plants just outcompete them almost immediately.
So quickly.
Wiseman figures most of America's farmland would revert to prairie or native forest within a single generation. Imagine that. And that triggers this huge recovery of biodiversity.
Okay, so things break down, nature comes back. But now we have to pivot. We have to talk about the stuff that doesn't vanish, our permanent stain on the planet.
Right, the toxic legacy. And the big one here is plastic.
Because it doesn't really go away.
It doesn't biodegrade, not in the way organic matter does. It photodegrades. Sunlight breaks it down, but only into smaller and smaller and smaller pieces, these tiny particles, sometimes called micro-nurdles.
Micro-nurdles.
Yeah. And Wiseman talks about the infamous North Pacific Gyre, the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. It's not a solid island of trash. It's more like this vast, swirling soup of these tiny plastic bits suspended in the water.
And these particles get everywhere, contaminating ecosystems across the globe. They even form this thing researchers call the plastosphere.
Exactly. It's like a whole new ecosystem based on our plastic waste, with microbes colonizing these little plastic fragments.
Right.
And because plastic is so chemically inert, these particles are going to stick around for hundreds of thousands of years.
So they'll eventually settle out.
Settle into the sediment on the ocean floor, yeah. Forming this distinct, permanent, unnatural, toxic layer. Yeah, that's our geological tombstone, basically, visible to any future intelligence digging through the rock strata.
And if plastic is a chemical time bomb, nuclear waste is like a geological one, right?
A truly geological one. Waste stored in places like Yucca Mountain in the U.S., it will remain dangerously radioactive for over 250,000 years.
250,000 years. It's hard to even grasp that time scale.
It really is. To put it in perspective, 250,000 years ago, anatomically, modern humans were just kind of emerging. That's the time frame we're talking about for managing this stuff. It demands foresight way beyond anything our species has demonstrated so far.
So let's talk about that deep, deep time. If we're gone, what physical traces actually survive over, say, hundreds of thousands or millions of years? What could some future intelligent species possibly find?
Well, most of our big structures, concrete and steel, they're gone within a few thousand years. Eroded, rusted, collapsed, reclaimed.
Just gone.
Pretty much. The things that last longest physically are materials highly resistant to corrosion. Think bronze statues or massive carvings in hard stone. Mount Rushmore, for instance.
Oh, okay.
That could potentially last for hundreds of thousands of years, though the faces would slowly soften, erode, become less distinct over that time.
But is that the most enduring thing? Is there anything more permanent?
There is, but the most indelible mark we leave behind is entirely invisible. And maybe the most poetic? in a strange way.
Okay.
It's what he calls the ethereal mark, the ever-expanding sphere of radio and television broadcasts that we started pumping out in the 20th century.
Wait, you mean like old TV shows and radio signals?
Exactly. Those electromagnetic waves carry our sounds, our images.
Yeah.
They left Earth decades ago and are traveling outwards at the speed of light.
Wow.
They will just keep going, expanding forever. A silent bubble of human noise and pictures drifting through the cosmos long, long after every single one of our cities has turned back into dust.
That contrast is incredible. Which really brings us neatly to the key themes Wiseman wants us to take away from this whole thought experiment. The first one feels obvious now. Nature's resilience versus human fragility.
Absolutely. The sheer amount of constant energy we need just to keep our complex world running. It highlights how temporary it all is compared to the relentless, patient power of entropy and natural decay.
Entropy always wins, right?
Entropy always wins.
Yeah.
It's just physics. Everything falls apart unless you keep putting energy in to hold it together.
The second huge theme is humanity as a geological force, this idea of the Anthropocene. The book makes such a powerful case that we've fundamentally, permanently altered the planet's chemistry.
We really have.
And we're leaving this distinct artificial layer in the rock, defined not by our grand monuments, but by synthetics, plastics, and nuclear isotopes.
Yeah, and when you think that every single used plastic bottle, every wrapper, contributes to a physical legacy that will outlast the pyramids, it forces a terrifying rethink of our priorities, doesn't it? Why are our most disposable creations the ones that endure the longest?
And that leads straight into the final one, the paradoxical legacy. Our greatest achievements, art, cities, culture, they vanish relatively quickly. But our most durable monuments, the things that will mark our time here, it's the stuff we try to throw away, our waste.
It's almost darkly funny. Our most lasting achievement is our garbage.
These big ideas are captured in some really memorable lines or concepts in the book. Let's share a few that really crystallize things.
Good idea. There are definitely some phrases that stick with you.
We already touched on the entropy one. We're constantly fighting entropy, and entropy always wins. It's just such a fundamental truth applied to our whole civilization.
Yeah, it grounds everything. Then there's the core idea about plastics, that our most lasting physical legacy might just be our non-biodegradable trash, that really forces you to question what we value and what actually lasts.
And for me, the most profound one is that notion that our only truly forever legacy is that silent, expanding sphere of radio waves.
Mm. It suggests our physical presence is so fleeting, so temporary, but the echo of our communication, our thoughts, our noise, that's eternal in a way.
It's mind-bending. And these insights, they aren't just philosophical curiosities, are they? They have real-world applications. They should shape how we act now.
Absolutely. Mm. Like, understanding how quickly water takes back our cities.
Yeah.
That should directly inspire engineers to rethink urban design.
Definitely. We need infrastructure that's more resilient, sure, but also more sustainable. Maybe designed to degrade gracefully, working with natural cycles, like water, instead of constantly fighting them.
And on a personal level, just that visceral understanding that every single piece of plastic you've ever used still exists somewhere, just likely in smaller pieces.
Yeah.
That has to drive more thoughtful consumption, right?
Yeah.
Moving away from single-use stuff becomes less of an abstract good idea and more of a direct response to seeing the afterlife of that product.
Mm.
It really does. Yeah. And it also gives you this huge, quiet appreciation for all the unseen labor. Mm-hmm. The thought experiment just illuminates all the hidden work. The pumping, the maintenance, the energy generation that happens every single day just to hold our modern world together against nature's constant pressure.
Yeah, you take it completely for granted until you imagine it gone. So as we wrap up this pretty intense journey through deep time, what was the biggest surprise or takeaway for you?
For me, I think it was the sheer scale of that toxic legacy. Especially the nuclear waste, that 250,000-year time frame. It's just staggering. It really instills this profound sense of humility. It puts all of human history into perspective as this brief, really intense flash on a very old, very resilient planet.
I totally agree on the humility part. But for me, the biggest surprise was actually the speed of the ecological recovery. Seeing the examples of Chernobyl and the DMZ.
Oh, yeah.
We often think environmental damage is permanent, irreversible. But the book shows how incredibly fast nature can bounce back when human pressure is just... lifted. It was actually, surprisingly, a note of hope for me.
That's a great point. And maybe that objective view is the book's most valuable lesson. It forces us to think about living more wisely, more sustainably, not necessarily for the planet, because the planet will likely be fine in the long run,
right?
But for ourselves, for how we want to live while we're actually here.
That was a truly fascinating and definitely humbling deep dive into Alan Wiseman's The World Without Us. Really makes you think. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.